Hey, welcome back, everybody, to this podcast. It's been a while, and it's going to be a while because it's been a busy month, and March is always more busy than other months. And I wanted to entertain you with a coffee episode to take a little coffee break with coffee savant number three, Eskedar. She's from Ethiopia, but she lives in Vilnius. And today she told her inspiring story how she escaped Ethiopia 19 years ago, went to the Sudan, to Libya, was in prison. Went to Malta and then finally ended up in Lithuania. It's a crazy and it's at the same time inspiring story. And now she has several cafes, four if I'm not mistaken, in Vilnius. And we talked about how she's entertaining herself now in Vilnius, how she's raising awareness and is really politically active in Lithuania. She speaks Lithuanian, but we did this podcast obviously in English. And she went back to Ethiopia last month and she told me today what she experienced about her trip back and the exploitation she saw in the coffee plantations in Ethiopia. Again, raising awareness. We talked a lot about coffee and drank her original bulletproof coffee from Ethiopia. So if you enjoyed this episode, there's going to be more of that. Please share with friends who love coffee and love different coffee stories. And this is just a coffee table discussion with my good friend Eskedar. Thank you for being here. Bye. Good morning. Good morning. We're rolling.
Yes. How long is your podcast? Like, how, when did you started it?
Over two years ago.
2 years. Oh my.
March 2 years ago.
And we sat down to do a test record, I remember,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you were the only friend and coffee expert I had because I did different ones to
Yes.
try it out
Yeah.
and you agreed to do a test run and
Yes.
now we're here.
Yes,
Actually,
we are.
is it 2 or 3 years? I'm
Congratulations. Well done. I mean, you've been doing great. And you know, it's like some of the subjects are quite hard because I don't really understand basketball
very
that much.
specific.
Yes, very specific. But some things you've done on coffee is also really, really nice.
With one
Yes.
of your friends too, in Treviso.
Really? Yes. I remember. I saw the picture and then yes, that was so awesome. And I remember asking him like, how are you doing good coffee in a bad in a country of bad coffee? So he said one person at a time. And that day I remember, I think we had a couple of espresso, a flat white, and then we had some drips. So it's like bring on everything you got. So it was such a beautiful place.
It's a beautiful place. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a co
ciao, bellissimo.
bellissimo. That was Coffee Savant number two in Treviso.
Yes.
Before we get to the essence of this conversation,
Yes.
we're having bulletproof coffee, and I'm very interested if this is actually the original bulletproof coffee. Let's bust the myth of bulletproof
You know, it's
coffee.
like you call it now bulletproof coffee, and you know, for me culturally growing up in Ethiopia, it's like what the hell is bulletproof coffee? And then people tell me it's like you have to put oil or something in that. It's like, come on, this is not bulletproof, it's just traditional Gragi tribal coffee with butter.
With butter,
Yes,
yes.
spiced butter.
So why? What is the spice butter? Okay, what
Yes.
this is because the fad diet or the
Yes.
fad coffee is bulletproof with MCT oil, with butter, ghee butter. Where is this originally the recipe come from?
Coming from.
In Ethiopia, because this is from the ceremony that you use,
Yes.
always put butter
Yes.
that's with spices, and explain what's the origin of
Well,
this.
I'm from Ethiopia, so I grew up in a multi-ethnical society. So I myself, I'm a mixture of like six tribes. So one of the tribe is Gragi, and they do have the culture of drinking coffee with butter. And sometimes they are even boiling it in jebena. Jebena is a clay pot, which we use to boil coffee, to brew coffee. And yeah, that's where they add it. Why? Because I don't know. Like, they have a lot of cattle. And even in the food they eat, there is a lot of lean meat and butter. So I think that's the main reason they put it there.
But did they have a like reason to do that, or was it just kind of they thought of it as a
You know, why do French have, I don't know, cheese? Or, you know, why do the Italians drink a lot of wine or produce wine?
Just,
I think it just an evolution of food culture in the society. I think, I don't think they thought about I don't think they have thought about like what's the health effect or benefits. We have, for example, in our culture, how women take care of her hair is by applying natural butter on the hair.
I should try it.
Yeah. And then you're leaving it like for a day, two, you know, and then even the smell changes, right? Or we do have a tribe where you are immersing your feet like fully in butter.
Wow, because
they believe that it feeds through the pores, you know,
for the skin
into not only the skin but into the whole body. So the why of it, I don't know, but it is good, and when you are used to it, and then it becomes your culture, and you don't question it, and then science comes in.
Well, they should have trademarked it before the U.S. got a hold of it.
Do they trademark it?
Well,
I don't know. I hope not.
they trademarked the Bulletproof brand. I have some collagen Bulletproof supplements that I use, but they have a big brand of it, you know. But
I see.
But they started with coffee that has the ghee butter, but the MCT oil is kind of the way it works on your brain.
Yes.
The keto diet is like more with keto related, but. Long story short, it's a fad. You know, it's something that for the modern culture, it's interesting. But for you,
For me, it's a culture, and then of course, science always helps, right? It just gives the reason to whatever you are practicing, right? Just like fasting as well. We do a lot of fasting in Ethiopia, and today you call it intermittent fasting. But culturally, like if you grew up in an Orthodox society or family like I did, we have lots of fasting. That means like at least half a year, we live a vegan life, right? It's like dairy-free, meat-free, you know.
Interesting.
No animal products. Yes. So, for example, this Monday, like, you know, the Easter fasting will start. And Easter fasting season is like 55 days. 55 days of meat or no fish and nothing else, right? And then you would think of, it's like, how do you manage that? Monday to Friday, you don't eat anything till 3 p.m. You know, it's like you have dinner, and then at 3 p.m., the mass at the church ends, and then that's when you start eating, and then within, I don't know, 3-4 hours, and then you're done again for the next one. So there is that intermittent fasting as well.
Because I just like, that's my type of culture with the fasting, fasting, coffee.
So that's very interesting. Yes.
But it's healthy too, so it's good for the body.
That's a good thing. Yes.
But not long story. I mean, we can get deep into, you know, like a tree, so many branches that we can go off on.
Yes.
But we can do this in Lithuanian also, for people that don't know. You speak fluent Lithuanian.
Yes, I do.
And
fluent.
You understand and speak. You understand everything, and you speak really easily.
Yeah.
Okay. You've been in Lithuanian now for 14 years.
Something like that. I'm in Lithuania for 17 years.
17 years.
Yes. I've been away from Ethiopia for 19 years. And then, only this year I went back. After 19 years, 17 of them in Lithuania.
And the way you told me your story, you can write actually a book about the way you left Ethiopia, why you left for political reasons. And it reminded me a little bit of Francis Ngannou, who escaped, I think, Cameroon. And he was deported back several times. He almost died on the journey several times, and it was in the Sahara and desert. And then there's a long story. It's a very interesting story. But you had also a long journey out of Ethiopia.
Yeah, that's true.
To get to Lithuania, out of all places.
True.
Can you summarize your journey of the path out of Ethiopia, and then coming to Lithuania, and then starting and actually creating a big coffee business in Lithuania? Because, I mean, it's something like a fairy tale.
Yeah, because, you know, people tend to see the end of
exactly.
it, right?
Exactly.
You know, and then there is the saying, oh, it's like you just started and then you have 4 coffee shops already. And then for me, the journey of business is 11 years. The journey of being a refugee is 19 years. And I know the process I've been going through, and some years harder than the others. Mm-hmm. So I left Ethiopia in 2005. It was after an election. The ruling party lost the election, and then students, we went out to protest. So I was a 4-year student then. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is that some of us got killed. Yeah, students, and then some imprisoned.
In the protest?
Yes. Uh-huh. Some imprisoned, and then those who survived, of course, you would think of, oh, I could fight, you know, mm-hmm. for the cause, but not by being in the country. So you leave, and then we left for Sudan, and then, so, you know, the reality that hits is that in Sudan, you become an illegal immigrant, and then you don't have the right even to be there. So you are always on a hide, and you don't know what to do. And then after...
You were home?
1920, yes, 1920. And then
that's
the
tough.
Peace, yeah. And then some people just took us in, you know, we were living with them.
Personal, private people just...
Yes, wow. Random Ethiopians, just because yeah. they are Ethiopian. Uh-huh. And then 2 years in Khartoum, so John Garang, the South Sudanese leader, got killed, you know, a helicopter crash, mm-hmm. got killed. And civil war starts in Khartoum. Mm. And of course, it was not safe, not only for South Sudanese, but also for migrants. And those people we stayed with, they said, you know, just go north. You know, you can go to Libya. You just need to pay smugglers. Mm-hmm. And then they'll move you there. And then we paid them. And then, you know, it's like 38 people on one Toyota, you know, Jeep, 4-wheel drive. Where the whole thing from the car is removed, the whole back seat and everything. And then we were like sardines, you know, on top inside. So I was the only girl on top of the car, you know, riding with the men. At that time, I was with my boyfriend, and he couldn't handle the heat, and he was getting sick, and I thought he would die, you know. So it was a journey, you know, I wouldn't wish for my, you know, kids to take.
I can't imagine at that age too.
Yeah. And then they brought us closer to the Libya's border, and you have to pay again, you know, it's like you are a thing, you are a cash cow for smugglers, you know. If you don't have the money, you have to call your parents. And then in my case, nobody even knew where I was, mm-hmm. even my family. So, fast forward, we end up in a private Libyan prison. The guy had, I don't know, more than 30 people locked in different cells, you know, and he's keeping us till we, I don't know, bring money from God knows where. And so
how long were you in that jail?
Long enough, I guess, maybe 2 months. But I don't know. He was feeding us dry bread, loaf of bread, you mm-hmm. know. And in Libya, I remember when I was there, for 25 lira, you could buy 5 loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. It's super cheap. So a quarter, you know, mm-hmm. of the money. And then, of course, people do not eat all the bread they buy, so they throw it out, and then they are collecting it. It's dried. They just put water into it, and just like an animal feeds, they used to feed us. And at the end of the day, some Sudanese smugglers bought us from the Libyan smuggler, and then they brought us to Benghazi, a city. And then in Benghazi, through the smugglers, we met some Ethiopian family also, who again said, you know, they are young and they don't have money. What you gonna do with them, you know? Just let them go. So they had us. We started living with them, started working in a coffee place, and, you know, running away from the police. Whenever you hear a siren, you just run out of that space, you know, being afraid. And and then one day, I realized that I was pregnant. And then even pregnant, you end up, quote, in jail. And then you go out. Of course, you take the hardest, which is the journey through the sea, you know, to Europe. And again, you don't know what it means, you know. You just tell you that there are people, they could take you out of Libya and then you pay this much. And then you pay that much and you come to the shore. I remember night, beautiful, like, you know, stars. And but I've never seen sea ever in my life. And then I come there, a vast space.
Yeah.
Where what is this, you know? And then there was like a very small boat. It looks like a paper boat, you know, just like on the water, because the water was rough. The sea was rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they say, we are boarding that. 26 people, two kids, Lizanne, 3 years old, myself pregnant, and more people.
And we boarded.
Yeah. 4 days, 3 nights on the sea.
How vivid is the memory? Like, you still
vivid,
until
vivid, very vivid. I can hear the sound of the sea. And it was not like the, you know, that when it's washing at the shore, but a kind of drum. I don't know, you know, it's like it was deep in the sea. I could hear a drum, you know.
Yeah.
And there were like only four people with a life jacket. That was myself, my boyfriend, and two more people. But you know that if something happens, nobody could save you from that. And then we arrived in Malta. They took us to a hospital. And at the hospital, waiting in the waiting, you know, space, I feel that there is a smell, a strong smell of fish, you know, bad, foul smell.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that it was coming from us, you know, the people who came from the sea, because we were immersed in that seawater. So, today feels like, you know, just, it didn't happen. It's not your life, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Some, it's like kind of other life, second life you're living.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I was in Malta. Lithuanians came there. Lithuania was not part of the Schengen area yet. Mm-hmm. And so they were kind of giving a helping hand to Malta to show they are a good citizen to join the European Union. And they have chosen 6 people, and one of them was me. So my question to the Lithuanian officers was, would I be able to continue my studies? Because I was 4-year student when I left Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
They said you can. And that was the only requirement I have, you know, to choose a country.
But so all of this is very, I mean, it's hard to imagine. You can feel it intrinsically, but other people can only imagine, you know, what it feels like. But when you live now in the completely different society, completely different world, and you think back of the journey you went through, the appreciation that you have, and the things that you now value. Do you value things differently? Do you value people differently? Does that influence
you? I was a very young girl, you know, traveling that, taking that journey.
Yeah.
And sometimes, as I said, you know, there are moments when I ask myself, was that my life really? You know, it's like, did that happen?
Yeah.
And how did I? You know, how did I risk my life, not only once, to take this journey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the question fades away because the answer is there. You become who you become
mm-hmm.
because you go through all the fire you went through. And today, yes, I love my life
mm-hmm.
and I value the people who are around me, the people who made me feel at home mm-hmm. in Lithuania, and not only in Lithuania, you know? So I think there was no other way but this, you know. I have chosen the way which was the right one, and I love the outcome. I see my life as, you know, everyone writes their own book of life, and I think there are so many beautiful pages on it and interesting pages on it, and a lot of learning in the process. So yeah,
and the. You know, like you said, Ethiopia is a very communal society. How much have you implemented that in Lithuania? Because you have a big community here as well.
A lot.
Because you created a community around you, and people gravitate towards you.
Yeah.
And you are a very open minded but also open person. We've known each other now also for quite a while now.
Yes,
six,
yes.
7 years, maybe, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, it's been a progression to watch you also establish yourself in Lithuania.
Yes.
But it's also because of your open-mindedness, open culture, open culturally, societal, communally, and you built a coffee business. Naturally, Ethiopian coffee.
Yeah. Yes.
How did that come about naturally that you have the Ethiopian connections and,
yes,
and through, I think it gets shipped through in the Netherlands?
Yes, actually, you know, Ethiopia coffee, myself, white coffee and society, community, right?
Yeah.
I think I started my journey as an activist, right? Through activism, which is like telling your story, telling my story.
Or here.
Yeah. And here, there and here as well,
yeah,
right? So coming here, it was very, I will take you back. So leave Sudan. Mm-hmm. I came to Sudan and then I had to wear a hijab, right? Because Sharia law is there, you know? So I was running from lack of freedom of speech. Yeah, I cannot protest. But then next door, there's no freedom of expression. Forget about freedom of speech.
Even a step
back. Yes. And then you are in that process and trying to understand how the world works and everything. And then you come to Libya and you end up, you know, losing even your freedom of movement because someone can just put you in prison, mm-hmm, a private prison where the government has, you know, doesn't know anything. And then you can end up in that. And then you cross the sea, you come to Europe, you realize that you're black. No, before that, you didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you didn't care.
Yeah.
So, and then you come here and then you kind of experience what it means by, you know, racism when, you know, in my country, we do have ethnic clashes today, right? So that thing, right, that thing will made me to start to speak up, mm-hmm, right? It's like the reason why I'm here is because this happened. Mm-hmm. And then politicians are saying that people who are coming to Europe, they're coming for the social support or for the welfare. And it's like, no, it's like I didn't know about welfare. And I was going to a private university in Ethiopia. I was well off already, so I wouldn't come for less, right? I mean, because I come to Lithuania and my first job is in McDonald's. I don't speak the language, so I clean the toilet. So you understand?
Yeah.
Where in Ethiopia, you have servants, basically, you know, people who can work at your home, cook for you, clean, you know, the home. That is provided by my family to me. So I cannot come here and do what I do if what you imagine is what I came for, right? So that will lead you to activism and not only to tell your story because you know your story and what the politician portray you is not correct, and then you start to speak for many more people, mm-hmm, than yourself, because in the journey you come to learn that some people run away from sexual violence and some people, mm-hmm, run away because they were persecuted for their political or, you know, whatever opinion. So that activism led me to create, again, community. Football is one of the things, you know, I played soccer in Ethiopia and I had a scholarship, sports scholarship as well. So that helped me, even when I don't speak the language in Lithuania, to find a group of people who spoke my language, which is football. So through soccer, I met other people. So I have, you know, people with refugee background, migrants as in one community, and then I have locals who are footballers, and then I end up even playing with men who are amateur club. That also, you know, grows your community, and then university. I went back to university, and then that community became another thing. So starting business, I think it was not for the sake of business, but it was the way I could talk about my culture. You know, I do way before starting the coffee business, I was doing coffee ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
First, I was doing it for my friends. And then I went to business, social business incubation. And I went there to pitch to start a restaurant business, which I thought, you know, like if I could hire elderly people where they don't come just to do the hard labor, but rather they have work to go, because I see loneliness in elderlies in Lithuania, in Europe, is big, right? The culture I came from, we're keeping our elderlies with us, right? You live in the same place, basically. So they are not left alone, or they're not sent, you know, to care houses. So I thought, you know, opening a restaurant where elderlies would just, you know, have the motivation to dress up and come out was a good idea. And then I went there with coffee. You know, I was roasting coffee, and then they're like, what are you talking about? What restaurant? You need to do this, you know? So that's brought the coffee as in business. But I think now I'm starting to think of it as a business, that it needs structure. And I don't need to hire only people for their background or something. I have to be more focused on their professionalism and, you know, on their knowledge in the area as well. So it's becoming more business right now than when I started it. So it came from just, you know, as Ethiopian, from the culture of, you know, giving, bringing people mm-hmm. together. And that's
can you say that the elderly people were the ones that push you towards the business?
Because the restaurant idea, yes. And then I think the ceremony and I didn't left it yet, you know, mm-hmm. it is still there, you know, someday I have to do something, because I do have great, you know, friends who were my neighbors, and I met them, you know, on the stairs, and then two elderly women, now my kids are calling them grandma, you know, and one is, I lived in a house, like, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago, and then with the other ones 3 years ago, and they are both, like, you know, grandmas for my kids. So you can see the need of connecting and bringing them out of, you know, being like spending hours and hours watching TV and doing nothing. I think it's not useful, and it's not good for the society itself.
I have a questions come up as we talk, because there's a lot of things that keep popping in. Yes. Like new guests coming in.
Good morning. Oh, love us. Eric, be careful. Yes.
So how do you, after all this that you went through and yeah. that you established yourself here, how do you still trust people? Oh. Like in the back, do you trust people intrinsically? Because you went through so much, let's call it trauma.
Yeah.
I mean, and do you have that in you automatically to have to give before you,
yes.
before you make a decision?
And actually, you know, going to Ethiopia when now, like 2-3 weeks ago, I think it made me also to realize that my openness, it's not only, you know, the inner thing, but also it is societal. Mm. Ethiopians, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you meet people at a lobby in a hotel, and then they tell you, oh, it's my daughter's birthday tomorrow, you can come, you know? And then I'm like, okay. And then the next day I call and I say, we're six, yeah. you know, because I brought
yeah.
a bunch of Lithuanians with myself. And they're like, no problem, just come, you know. And then you go to celebrate with those people. You didn't know them. You just bump into them, right? So the openness, I think it's very cultural as it is personal as well. Yes, I'm a very open person. I trust people easily. But then, you know, if the trust is broken, it's very hard for me to rebuild the same relationship. So, yeah.
but this is Joe Rogan also always said, I start giving people 100 points, you know, and then
yes.
once you start taking advantage of it, or you know obstruct my trust, or
yes.
I deduct the points.
That's yes, deducting. Absolutely.
I'm seeing where this is going, and it can be from 100 to 50, or it could be point by point.
Yeah,
just kind of. But I'm also naturally, I grew up in a very peaceful community.
Yeah.
Everywhere I was, Lithuania, in Germany, in America, always a small community that you trust each other, you
yeah.
help each other, the bad seeds get weeded out quickly.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn to really look at the world, not in a cynical way, but more in a like, let's do this, you know, yes. let's be positive, let's try to make the most out of it. And if it doesn't work out that way, okay, I know I can't deal with you. I know you're not going to be in my circle, of trust, whatever.
Yes, yes.
Now you went back to Ethiopia to visit after
19 years.
Yes. And what you encountered is something that you haven't felt in years. So talk to me what you saw with the Ethiopian coffee culture there that kind of left a mark on you that you told me about.
I think a lot of things. I said Ethiopia is intense in general, you know? It's like the whole thing is intense. Relationship, the smile of people, hugs you get just, you know, from random, you know? People, it's like, hey, my sister, or, you know, it's like, and that's not, it's not fake, you know? Mm-hmm. It just from the heart. And so you feel intense love. And at the same time, you see intense poverty. You see the hyper rich, you know? So it's like it doesn't fall into, you know, the shelves of order in your head, because, you know, I live in a small country right now in Lithuania. And if you go out on the street, you cannot differentiate who's ultra rich and poor, right? Unless, you know, you see where they live, or, you know, the cars they might drive, right? But when they walk on the streets, pretty much everyone is the same. But back in Ethiopia, you have this wide variety of, you know, people carrying huge loads on themselves in the market, right? You know, that's the hard labor they go through. Or you see people on the streets, which are beggars, and they have nothing, right? So talking about the coffee culture, I saw two beautiful things. So two things. One of the most beautiful things is you are driving through a city and you know you are approaching a village or a city by the smell of coffee. You know? I mean, the country smells of coffee, you know?
You'll get your coffee beans. That's the best smell I think I was.
It's like it's everywhere you go. In the areas coffee grow, not... You're just driving through, so the smell of incense Amazing. And coffee is there in the air, and we stopped everywhere we could to get a cup of coffee, and everywhere is different, you know, because the roasting, the processing is different. So that is very beautiful. And at the same time, we saw as well poverty, which is hard to describe, where coffee growing areas.
Poverty within the coffee.
Yes, within a coffee growing regions, right?
Yeah.
Where you see people have jobs only for 3 months per year, right? For the coffee picking season, processing season. And then what they are getting per day is less than a euro as in a salary, which is Ethiopian, I don't know, 100 birr. Today, I think in the black market is like, you know, 100 birr means, I don't know, 80 cents, maybe 70 cents. So that's what they get per day. And then it's like times 90 days. That is their income per year. There's no social guarantees. There are no, you know, health insurances. There are no nothing, neither for the kids nor for anything. And then you see videos of, you know, coffee processing stations, you know, people singing, or, you know, gospel songs and you know, children running around. And if you look deeper, you can see as well a lot of kids being employed to work in the coffee farms.
Like and what age?
Yes,
what
by age?
What age?
I don't know, 15, 16, 14, you know, as young as that. Okay. So generally speaking, I'm a kind of kid who grew up working as well. My grandparents, I was, you know, a shepherd, right? I worked in the farm as well. But the fair treatment and fair pay is not there in all the levels of coffee processors, whether it is certified, not certified, ethically sourced. you know, we have all the names, all kind of descriptions in the Western world. Mm-hmm. But in reality, when you go down, deep down in the villages, the reality is not that. People, families cannot afford to keep their kids. So mainly boys, I haven't seen a girl on the street, like as a beggar or street kid, but boys are kicked out as young as 7, you know, just go and figure out how to live your life. So Yirgitefe, marvelous place, beautiful place, you know. We are driving through the villages and then you have this beautiful sunset and the view, it, and yeah, you would think that, wow, this place, you know.
That was
they don't know, yeah, they don't know what people have, you would think. But then what is the view if you don't have a livelihood mm-hmm. every day, you know, if you cannot afford to go to school or to have the proper mm-hmm. medication, or what you can get is, I don't know, 90 euros per year as a salary. So it is very, very sad. So I was disappointed as a coffee business.
Mm-hmm.
I say to myself that when I'm back, if I cannot give back to that community, either I have to leave the coffee business or I have to do something which is tangible to start helping people there. So right now I'm with the plan to open a school there. I don't know how I'm going to manage, you know, because I'm not big business as in, you know, a business yet. I'm learning to do that, but I'm starting this year. I will send some kids to school starting September. So that's kind of the goal I'm aspiring to do. Yes.
Wow.
14 kids, that's my goal. I don't know how I'm going to pull it together, but I'm going to do my best to do that. Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to raise awareness for that.
Yes. Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben.
Yes.
yeah. So what do they do for the rest of the year if they only work 3 months and they get
nothing? Nothing. Basically, they have to
survive.
Yes, they have to survive. Imagine your Getafe area, 20,000 tons of coffee leaves, I think, the area, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, nothing. People do not get a penny afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really crazy to think of, you know, the market fluctuates and the coffee price goes up and down. And then when you think about it, the farmer gets nothing mm-hmm. for that. You know, once you collect your cherries and give it to the washing station and it is processed and went to the warehouse, after that, even the farmer doesn't benefit from any increase of price because the farmer already has sold it, you know, for 30 cents per kilo long ago, right? So, you know, oh my God, I mean, if we don't do something, every one of us, as, you know, people who are making their livelihood from coffee, and I think I live a good life as well, you know, I'm not begging on the streets, or my kids do not have to worry if we're going to have food or not. So, including myself, everyone who earns their livelihood from coffee, if we cannot pull ourselves, you know, together and build and help there, we're just, I don't know, we're just benefiting on the loss of somebody else. Yeah.
You feel that guilt?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
It is hard to fathom for people because we live in such a healthy and really good society, you know, above standards for the average
person. That's you know, it's like when you say healthy, clean as well comes with it, and clean in that sense. Today, yeah, like Yirgitefe Gedio zone where we were like 3 weeks ago, you know, it's like roads are made, you know, gravel roads, kind of, you know, dirt roads are made everywhere to every village, everywhere. And it's not asphalt. That means big trucks are going through the villages every day causing so much dust, mm-hmm. and people are breathing that. You see kids on the street, you know, just standing, like the leaves of a plant is brown from the dust. Imagine you are breathing that.
Your lungs, how your lungs look.
Yes, how your lungs look every day. And, you know, yeah. Nobody cares enough to build even a road.
Nobody,
you know,
sees nobody
for the hog.
Yeah. Nobody sees it from the outside. That the people, as much as they can save money on those kind of things, they're going to save to have a bigger margin of benefit.
So you see, I think who's benefiting in this, you know, it's like the government, which is, you know, taxing the export. Us, you know, roasters who are going as well. It's like plenty of roasters. I mean, Lithuania is a very small country, but so many roasters have been to such villages, have been using the pictures for marketing and everything, right? But, you know, that's what it is, you know? That's what we get. We get the clean beans, no dust on it, right? But people are breathing what we create, you know, there, and they live in that, so...
Tough. It's
not that beautiful.
Not that beautiful.
You know? People, not that fancy. Not that beautiful. Yes.
It's not what people imagine it to be from the pictures that they see,
yes.
on of the,
yes.
fields and of the.
Yeah.
There's not that many happy people. Bottom line.
Bottom line, yes. People suffer.
Suffer.
Yes. Yeah. The happiness is, you know, I think a state of mind, and Ethiopians, you know, and I think they are super optimists with the situation that there is in the country as well, you know. It's like to keep optimism and to smile is a huge deal, you know.
So this is something that when you talked about the people are welcoming and are open,
yes,
and they invite you to their house,
yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder, and that was the first thing that came to my mind, that people come from a Western society, come to visit, and you said it's not fake, but would people think that's fake? Would people or you feel that it's
my friends, like, you know, what I saw is what my friends have seen,
yeah.
Right? And one of the person who traveled with me, she said, this feels like home. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm home. You know, it's just you don't speak the language. You know, she said, that's the only pity thing. I cannot speak the language, but I'm home, you know? So it's really nice that people do feel the love, and it's not fake. Another thing is you don't see aggression. I mean, Addis Ababa, I mean, the capital city, it's a crazy place to drive. I mean, daytime, evening, the traffic is insane. But you don't see aggression. People would just pass through each other somehow, and then they're telling each other, go, go, go. I can see that. It's like, if it is beeping, it's a friendly beeping. Just
yeah.
Be careful. It's not like, what the hell, you know?
Interesting.
So it's interesting. If two cars are not passing each other, the other guy could come off his car and watch, and then, you know, he let them, you know, to pass each other. So that is the beautiful thing about the culture. And I think one vivid memory, I'm standing in front of a hotel room waiting for a taxi, and I see this gentleman, you know, with a suit, new car, driving, and a woman with a child on her hand is trying to cross. And you see her at one point, she's startled, you know, it's like she was scared. And that guy, you know, stops in the middle of, you know, the street where it is busy as well, you know, put down the his window, and he says, my dear, I'm so sorry. Did I scare you? It's like, that's...
Yeah,
like,
empathy.
Empathy.
Yeah, highest level of empathy.
That's like, wow. And he used Natiye, which is very much mommy, like my dearest, my darling. That was like, that was something. You just, you know, so you stand there, you take in everything that comes, you know, everything that you hear, and you understand that you're not a weirdo. It's fine. To have empathy. So one of my employee comes to Lithuania from Tanzania. She used to be my employee. Because of her visa, they return her back to Tanzania. And then one day she appears at work at one of the cafes. And then employees tell me that, you know, Yola is here. So I went to see her. And then she said, you know, I don't have a place to go. my friends, none of them have space to take me. And, you know, she just came. I said to her, well, you can stay for a month if you want to at my place. I mean, I have a Lithuanian partner. So he was like, and I called and I said, is that okay if, and then he said, you know, he said, if she doesn't have, you know, elsewhere to go, yeah, what can you do, you know? But I understand, you know, the cultural difference. And then we went to Ethiopia, and then he experiences the same thing where people are, you know,
come.
Yeah, let's eat together. You know, it's like nibla means let's eat together. So you enter a restaurant, people tell you, nibla, come and eat, you know? So there is that beauty, and it is there.
That's it. You know, that's where Homo sapiens originated from. that's the
original. We survived.
Yes, community. And the Western culture, the more Westerners become Westerners, the more Western you go, the more individualized it is, the more it's about me, the more it's about, you know, kind of dividing it up, and it's more... And
then you die alone.
It's forgotten. Yeah. It's forgotten. That community is probably the most important. And I feel it when I'm in Lithuania, because when I was in Berlin or where I was somewhere else, it's always good that I have people, but it's minimal amounts. That's why I live in Lithuania, because I have, it's a cozy city, first of all, in Vilnius.
Yes,
but it's easier to get together with people, and it's much easier to find each other
in a walking distance.
Walking distance, especially with my travel, when you come back, it's more like, let's have a coffee. Let's meet up. And then within 10, 15 minutes, you kind of see in the city, have a coffee, and you're out. True. So where can people find you in Vilnius, in your Eskedar coffee bar? So we're right now.
Yes.
But your mini empire, let's call it, in Vilnius to visit Eskedar.
What's beautiful about this space, look at that, it's marvelous. And this is a place where Lithuanian Independence Act was signed. So when I took the step to open a coffee place, it took me a while to find the place. So, and this was the place. And the reason was because I'm in this country as a foreigner. I came as a refugee, and I managed to open a business, and I became a Lithuanian citizen, probably maybe the first Ethiopian to become a Lithuanian citizen.
High five.
Yeah. And then activism, as I said, it's a very important thing. And in my life, it is in this country where I went to the court because of racial discrimination. A guy almost ran over me, right? So, and it became the precedent for Lithuanian legal system, because it is for the first time they took this case and made a verdict that someone did discrimination based on race.
Oh, wow.
So to be in this space, which is in the House of Signatories, for me, it means this place, this country is open to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of like different kind of people here. Like you can see a lot of people from LGBT community and migrants and refugees, and you know, it's like people who would feel, you know, or Lithuanians, and then you can have parliament members coming in here, and then it's like there is a lot of things going on in this place. So we are also under the museum of House of Signatories, so it is symbolic. So for me, this place is about, you know, rule of law, right, in the West. And the thing you can enjoy because the constitution grants you that. Going to Ethiopia, I guess, you know, for myself, it made me an understanding that I have more rights here than I could have it in Ethiopia, or any other Ethiopians could have it in Ethiopia, because, you know, sometimes the rule there is tyranny, you know, a police person or someone in, you know, power position could do whatever, you know, and there's no consequence. Yeah. So where do people find you? That was the question, right?
Yeah.
So here, I come here, to remember, you know, to get inspired, to see what you can create when...
To remember freedom.
Yes. When the environment allows you, and not to take it for granted as well. Because I think in most Western countries, we take democracy for granted. And that's why we're having today's Democrats in the US. Sorry. But, you know, so it is very important. So I come here for that. And I'm in Flow. It's a very modern office space where you found me.
Yes,
you just popped in and I'm there.
That's a beautiful space.
So I go there for productivity. It's a very nice space to work.
I did already.
Yeah. So it's a very nice space. So I go there. House of Histories is about, it's a museum. And that place is really interesting. That is a place for community. So, for example, on Saturdays, it's open to foreigners to come and learn Lithuanian language. So most of the people who are coming there are Ukrainians, but I start seeing other faces as well. So this great woman, Lena, organizes community to community kind of language lesson. So a lot of Lithuanians coming to teach a group of foreigner Lithuanian language, and that's been happening for the second year. So I go there for the community, and then at the bookstore, it's a nice place to read. So
Vaga.
So I'm here and there. I don't really have office, and I don't know if I need one.
No,
I don't
know. You have a lot of offices. That's why I travel around the world. I have an office in every cafe. And you have really good Wi-Fi in all those cafes that I was at. I will have to check out the House of History, you said?
Yes, House of History.
Yeah.
Good place to work as well.
Okay, I'll check
good
that
lights.
Out. Good lights.
Yes.
And everybody can find you on Instagram, Eskedar Coffee. And
yeah, Eskedar Coffee, Eskedar Coffee Bar, Eskedar Coffee Terrace. Yeah.
Coffee, you'll find it.
Eskedar, Lithuania, yeah, it will give you something.
All right. I think this was, I mean, we could talk and talk and talk.
Absolutely.
And happy Women's Day, International Women's Day. We already established that we really don't know how to interpret that, but we appreciate women.
So hold on a second.
Okay.
We are celebrating International Women's Day today with me making coffee for you, right?
and dedicating your time for a podcast.
So, so you understand what I meant by I don't think we need this shit.
Well, somehow we do raise awareness.
But in some places, like, I don't know, in places where women are forced to do things, like, I don't know, wearing what they don't want to wear, or, you know, marrying someone they don't want to, or FGM, which is female genital mutilation, like in Somalia. Such movements are important, and to dedicate a day for that is important. Here, I don't know, it's just like every day is a Women's Day. I wake up as one, so yeah, that's
we're blessed to have you here. I'm blessed to have you as my friend.
Yeah, really,
I would like to talk to you about racism, about the experience of freedom, non-freedom, about all the activist topics.
Yeah, you can see it. Ukrainian flag hanging, like, since before the war, actually.
Since before.
And a lot of people were not really happy. But some people, you know, like your uncle, you know what's coming.
Yes.
When you are in this region. Yeah.
And that's a whole different topic.
Yes. There. Absolutely. And talking about, you know, it's like Ukraine or Belarusian freedom, or, you know, any other freedom, you know, Africa doesn't care about that because they have their own shit there. Right. And Europe is thinking that only our cause, when our cause is supported, maybe we can think about you, Africa. And today, I think the power shift everywhere, and the political views, you know, that you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend principle, that is dividing the world so much. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a wake-up call as well for the Western society to understand that you have to be in sync everywhere fairly at the same time.
Yep.
Otherwise, you know, when things like this happen, war in Europe, you know, the other world would say, you know, you've been sleeping when we needed you.
It's bottom line. Are you united or are you not united?
In Africa, no, in the world. In the yeah, world, absolutely.
Yes. Are you united or are you not united? That's the bottom
absolutely.
Line.
That's
the question everybody has to ask themselves.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Cheers. And cheers to everybody. Eskedar on Instagram, everywhere.
EskedarCoffee.com.
They'll find it. Yeah. Google it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. Bye.